Every year in these days, around the turn of the year, there are all kinds of assessments that are done. People look back and highlight the best of the year that has gone by. We look ahead to anticipate what we might expect in the future. And people do all kinds of things to try to situate the time that we are in the bigger picture of history. One of the common kind of images that I see always, if you read a political cartoons, you see there is the old man that represents the year going out and the child representing the new year that is coming in. But almost always it has the same theme, that the child doesn't want to enter the new year because of how bad the previous year was. So it seems to be this constant refrain every year, as people talk about, well, I hope it's not as bad as last year. So it highlights the fact that we can easily take the most negative approach, the most negative understanding of the times that we are in. Now, since I have come here, I've spent a lot of time reading St. Augustine. I already have read quite a bit because he's so much a part of learning theology in the Catholic Church, but because of my new connection to our patron, I have been reading him more. And as I was reading a reflection by him at the end of the year, I found it very striking that he had a very similar commentary. So this is how St. Augustine described the way people evaluated their time. Keep in mind that he was writing this over 1,700 years ago. He says this: "The times are troubled. The times are bad." This is what we humans say. So if he was saying that 1,700 years ago, we are not covering any new ground by complaining about the times that we are in now. So what should our perspective be? How do we make sense of the time that we are in? Because it is part of our faith. The Gospels call us to read the signs of the time, to figure out how do we respond here and now, living our faith in this place. So there's a couple of thoughts that I want to share, two things that I think can give us a better perspective to evaluate in a more helpful way the times that we are in. The first thing is that we should strive for actual honesty. Now, honesty means that we're kind of looking for some middle ground. We're trying to avoid the one extreme that is a kind of Pollyannish approach that says, well, things are fine, while ignoring what the real challenges are. But also avoiding the other extreme that says things are worse than ever, which is almost never true. In fact, logically, that can only be true once ever. So it's probably not now. So we should be honest about the times that we are in. The second perspective is that we should very intentionally assess the times we are in from a God of faith, a wisdom perspective, to recognize that every time is a part of a gift of God. Every time exists because of the presence of a creator that allows us to exist. And so it is only through that lens that we can make sense of what's real. So let's think a little bit more about these two ways of approaching it. This honest approach allows us to avoid extremes, which too often can be paralyzing. They can prevent us from acting because it can seem like, well, it's so far beyond my control that I don't know what to do, I don't do anything. Now, in the same quote that I already read from St. Augustine, he continues immediately after talking about people's attitude about troubled times, and he says this: "But we are our times. If only we would live properly, our times would be good. Such as we are, such are our times." So St. Augustine does not give us an out. He does not allow us to blame anybody else for the state of things. He says, you have a responsibility to be the best you can, no matter the circumstances. So it's a challenge for us then to examine everything in the light of how is it that we should respond. Now, it certainly does not mean that if we live good lives, then everything in the world is going to be perfect. It's not that at all. But rather, the honest approach is to say, what I have to do is pay attention to what is in my control. What kind of influence do I have? And I need to be the best I can be in that realm. And so it allows me to make my circle better because I live in such a way that does not just take the kind of negative attitude of the times, but sees the good that can be accomplished. We see this throughout the history of the church when we look at the lives of our greatest saints. Many of our saints are saints precisely because they responded in a personally heroic ways to horrible situations. They lived in the midst of often challenges that most of us can't comprehend. Persecutions, poverty, threats against them. And their response to these was not to become paralyzed, but to insert the full power of what God placed in them to respond to what was going on around them, to the point that they led others to experience and discover God where otherwise they might not have. And so what God raised up in the saints of our history is what God wants from us. God does not expect more from saints than he does from any one of us, because God provides each one of us the exact same things that he provides the saints. What distinguishes the saints is how well they take advantage of what God gives to live fully no matter the circumstances that surround them. And so the honest approach is to say, okay, God, this is what I can do. It doesn't mean we ignore the bigger problems that are outside of our circle, but it does mean that we realize that because they're out of our circle, our approach to them must be prayer, where we say to God, I put these in your hands. I pray that you can bring about the good despite what the challenges are, that you can protect those who are innocent and harmed because of the problems of our day. And so we do not separate ourselves from what are the biggest problems, but we intentionally place them in the hands of God to let God be God. And so the second idea, how do we look at everything from the perspective of our faith, from the wisdom that God can give to us? When we allow God to be God, then it can provide us strength that we might overlook otherwise. I want to share another quote from St. Augustine that can help us to have the God perspective on the times in which we live. Now, it's very common for us to avoid trying to be too preoccupied with the past that is already gone, with the future that we can't control. And in a commentary on the Psalms, St. Augustine highlights this reality, that we shouldn't be too preoccupied with the past or the future. And the response of many people is to say, be focused on the present moment. And while there's certainly some good in that, it's interesting to see that St. Augustine says, not even that. He challenges us to avoid the idea of the present moment, because this is what he says. Suppose we say this moment. It is gone as soon as we pronounce the syllables. Rather, he says, we should rather focus our thoughts on eternity. We do not assess our times by the present moment because it is always progressing. It is always fleeting. The constant is eternity. The constant is that the God outside of time and all creation is existing in time. And that as Catholics, we have the unique perspective of recognizing the eternal at the same time as we live in the present. At the same time as we try to learn from our past and try to anticipate our future. No matter how time goes on, we have a God who exists in the eternal. There is a passage, a beautiful passage in that part of the Old Testament that says a time for sowing, a time for reaping, that whole long list. And at the very end of it, it says, but our hearts were made for the timeless. We were made for eternity. God created us so that we could live forever. And part of the grace that God provides to us is a taste of that reality, the eternal reality. Every time we come here, we have an opportunity for that taste. Now, this can help, I think, also understand the celebration of Epiphany. What is happening in Epiphany is trying to get our heads around the fact that this child in the manger is so much more than a child. And the only way to make any sense of who he really is to consider him in light of eternity. A gift that came from eternity into a certain time and place. A gift from the eternal reality of God to be our salvation. Those magi that we honor on this day of Epiphany, they had a sense of that reality. So think about what they did in light of eternity. They reacted to what they saw at a moment in time, a star appearing in the sky. But they knew as soon as they saw that star that it represented something far greater. It wasn't just a phenomenon to take in, it was something to follow, to pursue, to allow to lead, to encounter more than they even imagined. And so with their sense that this was something bigger, they embarked on their journey, not knowing where it would lead, not concerned about the hardships of making that journey, but only motivated by the desire to come in contact with the eternal. And when they arrived at that nativity scene, that first place that we celebrated Christmas, they in fact discovered far more. Because they were able to take in the child from the perspective of eternity, their lives were changed. It tells us that they saw in this child so much more, and they laid down at his feet a gift of gold to recognize this is not just a child, this is a king. But not just an ordinary king, a king who would lay down his life, and that in his death, they would give him the gift of myrrh so that his body could be anointed and laid to rest. But he was more even than a king who would lay down his life. This king who would lay down his life is God. And so they presented incense because they came to worship him. They recognized in this child something that was far beyond the moment that they were in. It tells us at the end of that story that after they decided to go back, that they went home by another way. To me, that always seems like only partly a practical reality of avoiding Herod, but also a deeper spiritual reality. They went back home differently than they came because you cannot come into contact with the eternal and remain the same. Now, the celebration of Epiphany is also an opportunity that is given to us. Because when we come here for Mass, what is happening is the revelation of God, an Epiphany given to us right now. And just like the Magi who were able to go up to the child Jesus to touch him and worship him, we come here for Mass every time with the same opportunity. To worship him, to kneel before him, to lay our gifts before him, and then even more than they had, to consume him. Every time we gather for Mass, God is revealing himself and inviting us into eternity, giving us a taste here and now of the far greater reality than this world allows, the reality of a God in heaven who comes to meet his people and invites us to share in the eternity we were made for. And so Epiphany can highlight for us something that we might otherwise take for granted as we come week by week and we take in this part of our Catholic faith. We are always challenged to see it more fully, to recognize the reality of what is taking place here. Epiphany is a revelation of God, and every time we gather for Mass, God is revealing Himself for us. And so our prayer is that we will heed the words of St. Augustine, our patron, that we will focus our attention not only in the present moment, but in the eternal moment. That we will look at the times that we live in as the opportunity that God provides to us. The opportunity to live well. To live in such a way that our lives give witness to the greater truths that our world often does not see. To live well is to make our times better. And so we should build from our experience here at this Mass. Live always with an eye to the eternal.